Everyone, and welcome to Ask the Horse Live. I'm your host, Haley Peffer, digital editor at thehorse.com. Lameness is the most common cause of poor performance in equine athletes, and researchers have shown that many behavioral issues under saddle are caused by physical pain. Proactive treatment strategies can help extend your horse's competitive career and improve his overall well-being. This event is brought to you by Arthromed. To answer your questions, we are joined by expert panelists Dr. Bo Whitaker from Brazos Valley Equine Hospital and Dr. J.D. Conway with Arthromed. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you guys for having us.
Dr. Whitaker, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
I grew up in Tennessee, and then I ended up going to Oklahoma State for college and ended up at Texas A&M for veterinary school. From there, I spent a year doing an internship at Arizona Equine outside of Phoenix. After that, I worked at the 460s Ranch for a little while, which is a really neat experience. And then I've been in the Salado area now for about 18 years, which was a practice called Dr. T's Equine Clinic in the Brazos Valley Equine Hospital. There I specialize in sports medicine and live here with my wife and two daughters.
Awesome. Thank you. And Dr. Conway, can you tell us a little bit about your background and your role with Arthromed?
Yes, ma'am. Thanks again for having us. My name is JD. Grew up Kentucky, Versailles area, thoroughbred background, racehorse background. Went to veterinary school at Colorado State University, was involved in a lot of research there, the Orthopedic Research Center, now since called the TMI, Translational Medicine Institute. From there went on and did an internship back in Texas, Weatherford, Texas, for a year, migrated back into research side of things at back at CSU, spent another couple years there. And then started my own practice in the Panhandle of Texas and Oklahoma. Spent 3.5-4 years there, and then back to the North Texas area around Decatur another 2 years, and then went into industry as an industry veterinarian, first with Decra Pharmaceuticals, and then moved over to Contura, makers of Arthromed. And been here about a year, and I'm the director of veterinary services at Contura. But I still do practice, about 6 months out of the year, I practice a day or so a week in Cody, Wyoming, there with my wife and daughter. So, yes, ma'am.
Awesome. Thank you. Before we begin answering questions, I want to remind everyone of our Ask the Horse Live format. We're starting with questions submitted during registration. If you're listening live and would like to submit a question, please do so via the chat window. We'll do our best to get to as many of your questions as possible. If you're listening to the podcast recording of this event and would like to join us live in the future, please visit thehorse.com/askthehorselive to register for notifications. And with that, we're going to jump in. So our first question is for you, Dr. Whitaker. It's from Jacob in Florida, who wants to know the most common causes of lameness in performance horses.
Yeah, Jacob, the most common causes typically that we see is osteoarthritis, just due to a lot of it's wear and tear because of the jobs we ask these horses to do. Besides that, we most common lameness we see are injuries. Usually if you see a lameness, especially in the front end, the feet are a very common cause of those as well. So typically we'll kind of start at the bottom and work our way up, especially in the front end. In the back end, especially here in Texas, we see a lot of Western performance horses. And lamenesses in the back end often are due to hocks and stifles or suspensories. So just depending on the type of horse that we're dealing with, we can focus in on one area typically, just based on what we normally see on those horses. But I'd say osteoarthritis, number one, and then secondary, we're looking at soft tissue injuries.
Dr. Conway, Stephanie in Florida wants to know how often she should have her vet evaluate her performance horse for soundness.
Good question, Stephanie. And my wife asks the exact same question quite regularly. She's a horse trainer, barrel horse trainer. And the answer is there's probably not a really good answer other than if you think you need to have your horse checked, it's probably due for a performance lameness exam. But if you're noticing something wrong in performance, I think that's a good opportunity to bring the horse in for a performance exam. That may be just missing a barrel if you're a barrel horse, or if you're a reining horse, not doing their turns properly or correctly. If you're looking at a dressage horse, it may be missing a lead change or something simple. It doesn't always have to be a head bobbing lameness to get to a vet for performance horse evaluation or exam. And there's another number of situations where, while it might be performance limiting, it could be related to, you know, blood work or something else. And I'm thinking of like PPID, pars pituitary intermediary dysfunction, which is commonly a common problem in some horses. Cushing's is the common term for that, or insulin dysregulation is another thing that props up. So I think it's just in general getting into your vet as often as needed, or if you're starting to see limitations in performance of some type.
Dr. Whitaker, Marcia in Texas asked if a suspensory ligament lesion is career ending for performance horses, and what are the best treatment options?
That's certainly not, doesn't have to be career ending. I mean, some of the more, maybe the more severe ones can be, and especially in older horses. But I'd say for the most part, you know, they're not. There's a wide range of different types of suspensory injuries. So you have a upper part of the suspensory and middle part and the branches. And you have that, of course, in the front and hind limbs. And oftentimes front end suspensory issues are much different from hind end issues. Typically in the front end, we're dealing with more of an acute injury. So where horses are, you know, sound and all of a sudden something gives, or oftentimes we'll see core lesions in branches or proximal suspensories. Whereas in the rear end, oftentimes we deal with more chronic proximal suspensory issues there that are sometimes secondary to other issues. So they certainly don't have to be career ending. There are some surgical options, especially on the hind legs, that we can often get these horses back to performance in. Usually what we'll start with from a treatment standpoint with an acute injury is we'll start with a regenerative therapy. So those can be PRP, amnion-based therapies. I don't use a lot of stem cells. You could use stem cells. And then usually we'll follow that up with some shockwave therapy, often some laser therapy as well. And so that's typically how we treat those. On the hind limb proximal suspensories, if we can't get those horses sound, oftentimes we'll elect for an erectomy on those horses. But certainly does not have to be career ending. Most of the horses that we treat suspensories on do go back into their careers.
Dr. Conway, Robert in Massachusetts asks what conditioning exercises can be used to reduce a horse's likelihood of developing joint disease or slow its progression.
It's an important question, Robert, and I think conditioning does play a major role in helping to manage joint disease, if not prevent it, if you can. So the goal would be, you know, to build strength, some flexibility, hopefully some endurance, in a way that supports the tendons or the ligaments to maintain some healthy cartilage. So maybe what that looks like as far as strategy is just a consistent workload. It's being able to get that horse out there, exercising, avoiding any sudden changes over stimulation of soft tissue or joints, and maintaining that workload and that conditioning program. I think would be important to help slow that disease or any progression. Maybe some regular low impact conditioning as well. Oftentimes recommend hill exercises. Seems like those are helpful, especially developing the hindquarters of some of these horses, improving joint stability. We find it's pretty successful, especially in stifle issues. You know, you get some of these horses that are pretty straight in the stifle through the hock and their hindquarters. And if you get them doing some hills and things, you can eliminate potentially some of that upward fixation that they might get in the patella ligaments. So that's another thing. I also like Cavalletti exercises. I think those are important. I'll probably speak to those a number of times. I think that improves range of motion, coordination, proprioception of the horse. So those are various things. There's other, you know, type cross training things, and then of course cool down at parts of your exercise program, rest and recovery. So it's just not going out there and just doing accelerated moves or whatnot after without warming up your horse. So all of that stuff goes into maintaining your performance horse and keeping them conditioned, hopefully to slow any OA progression.
Dr. Whitaker, Carolyn in Nebraska asks how she should manage a horse with navicular syndrome to keep him comfortable in a performance career.
Yeah, certainly something we deal with a lot, Carolyn. You kind of have to define exactly what the typically what navicular syndrome is, because it can mean a lot of things. And luckily now with MRI and CT and things like that, we can kind of narrow those down and exactly what we're dealing with. I think for the purposes of the question, we'll just say we've got a horse with some suspensory, some degeneration of the navicular bone in this case. On those horses, typically shoeing is super important. So, you know, you need ready grasp, look at the angles of the foot, you know, to make sure that those angles are correct and positive. Sometimes, you know, rolling a toe or rocking a shoe or a wedge is indicated to try to help take some stress off that navicular bone, depending on what your horse's ready grass look like. So I think shoeing, number one thing is to get that right. Some horses just with the shoeing can make a lot of progress. Second to that, we typically look at doing injections, typically in this case, corticosteroid injections for the most part, which can be either in the coffin joint or the navicular bursa. There's also some other products, some bisphosphonates, which are products that stop some of the bone degeneration and some of the bone pain. Those can be effective in these cases as well. Oftentimes, these horses will keep on systemics like a thyrococcid daily on some of these horses, helps them maintain as well. So those would be the big things that typically we deal with is, or we look at doing our shoeing, injections, and we've also done other things. Not just corticosteroids. I've had some that respond well to PRP and the navicular bursa. I've had some that respond well to polyacrylamide gel injections, the navicular bursa as well. So several products you can use. Typically, cortisone is the most common one. And then, like I said, bisphosphonates can be effective too. And last resort is a neurectomy where you take out a piece of the nerve on each side where they can't feel that part of their foot. But typically, like I said, that's a last resort for us.
Dr. Conway, Laura in Ontario says her horse is rehabbing from a hock injury and has mild arthritis in that joint. How can she help this horse rebuild strength without exacerbating his arthritis?
That's a good question as well. And rehab's probably an important aspect in recovery from an injury. There's various modalities. We kind of mentioned in a previous question of what that might look like as far as rehab and the hock, but ice, it's always at the top of the list. So cryotherapy, it's been around for 50 plus years, since more than that, hundreds of years. And that's always in my arsenal as a go-to when I'm dealing with injury, at least in the acute phase. I think about stretching exercises. Again, I think about Cavalletti's. I think about many of the rehab programs that are out there where you put a horse in a walk and on a treadmill with water to increase range of motion. All of those things I think can help rehab from a hock injury, because you know what you don't want to do is exacerbate something that happened. You know, that with a hock it could be a number of different things, kind of going to Beau's point about navicular syndrome with a hock. There's a lot going on there as well. You just depend on which part of the joint the injury occurred in, or is it even more of a soft tissue injury? Is it fusing in those hocks? So there's a number of different things. So maybe that gets back to the original part of this, is just getting in a veterinarian and getting a proper diagnosis as well. But in general, rehab is a good part of the program of getting these horses to improve range of motion is maybe the most important thing for me, moving and getting them back into regular exercise, I think is a part of that. So, yes.
Dr. Whitaker, Mary in Tennessee says her 3-year-old gelding appears to drag one toe when walking. Could this be a sign of pain or other problems?
Yeah, it certainly could be a sign of pain. Of course, you want to get that evaluated by a veterinarian to determine that. I'd say one of the most common reasons we see them, if they're just dragging one toe, it'd be a stifle issue. Is probably the most common thing in a 3-year-old. It's probably the first place I would look. Certainly, there could be other issues there as well. But certainly, I think it's just a case for trying to get the horse evaluated, have your veterinarian look at it, and see what's going on. Sometimes, if they're dragging both hind feet, especially a trot, sometimes that's just laziness. But if they're dragging one and not the other, it makes me think maybe there's something more going on, and certainly something to have your veterinarian look at.
Dr. Conway, Amber in Washington asks how veterinarians and horse owners can slow or prevent the progression of osteoarthritis.
Oh, that's a tough question. Really, as OA is an insidious degenerative process, so there's not a ton of things out there to slow it. We've talked about, conditioning, exercise, all of those things. Nutrition are all important parts of our arsenal. And keeping horses healthy. I think just keeping them healthy and keeping their immune system regulated is as important as anything. But we do have products and therapies that help mitigate some of the symptoms of the disease. And that's an important piece. But there are really relatively few products that actually are disease modifying or help modulate what's going on inside the joint with the synovial membrane or cartilage or whatnot. The focus of much of the research that's been going on with CSU, and specifically with Contura, the company I work for at CSU, is about this question of how do we mitigate progression of OA. And but getting back to the original question, I think keeping a horse healthy, as I mentioned, with weight, conditioning, exercise, nutrition, all is probably primary. And then doing a consistent vet performance check as a part of that equation as well. As far as therapies and things that we can inject into the horse, Bo's mentioned quite a few of them, but orthobiologics that could be targeted at OA as a disease could be part of that process. Injectables like APS, autologous protein solution, IRAP, PRP, stem cells, any of the orthobiologics. There's also the amnion products as well. And then the more recent product, the one I'm most familiar with, 2.5% polyacrylamide hydrogel, is a part of that equation too. We know these products have some disease modification characteristics just based on some of the science surrounding them. So I think all of those could be consideration, at least in slowing down the progression of OA. We just aren't going to just stop it, but we slow it down enough. I think we can get ahead of the game.
Dr. Whitaker, Krista in Oregon wants to know if there's any way to prevent suspensory injuries in horses.
Oh, I mean, there's no surefire way, but I think there's some things we can think about to, to do the best we can to make at least make it maybe less likely. I think one of those things is, which we've already talked about, is for navicular, it would be shoeing, making sure, you're getting ready grass for your horse's feet to make sure those angles are correct. I think that certainly can be a contributing factor in some cases. We see a lot of suspensory injuries, I think, especially in back legs that are compensatory to other issues. And so that might be, we see some sacroiliac injuries in some or sacroiliac pain that we think contributes. So I think making sure your horse is overall healthy, getting some of those maybe performance checks, like JD, like our comments talking about earlier, can be beneficial in some of those cases as well. I think watching the footing your horses are in, we see some injuries with really deep footing, especially if horses aren't used to being in it, and all of a sudden they're competing in really deep footing in an arena they're not used to. I think that makes it more likely in some cases. So those would be the big ones for me. I think kind of overall performance, making sure your horse is musculoskeletally healthy and not compensating for anything, and then making sure you get the shoeing and footing is good, I think, are important.
Dr. Conway, Jennifer in Kentucky wants to know how horse owners can determine if a lameness issue is stemming from the front limbs versus the hind limbs.
I think that when we start to look at forelimb lameness versus hind limb lameness, you know, I was always taught horse goes down on sound, at least on the forelimb. So down on sound is in the forelimb. I think it's reserved mostly for your veterinarian to be evaluating these, you know, to distinguish, because we can have a primary lameness in the forelimbs that we might be missing something in the hind limbs or vice versa. So I think it's a good opportunity to get back to your veterinarian and have them do a performance check or a lameness check. But looking at a horse, videoing the horse are all important parts of that relationship. I routinely get, I'm sure Bo does too, we routinely get videos from our clients of how they're performing, but also sometimes we ask them to trot the horse or send us videos and to us either by email or text. And I'm not insinuating we need to get a bunch of text messages all the time, but it is helpful to video and bring those with you when you go to the vet and see your veterinarian. I think it's an important piece of the diagnostic puzzle, as well as some of the newer technologies like the Sleep app out there. It could be helpful. I know a lot of vets utilize that, and they have a client part of that that app. But as far as looking at the hind limbs, they're a little bit trickier. Watching them go in circles on various ground types is helpful. Standing behind them might be helpful. You want to look at movement in the hip, tubercoxis sacrum. It's, you know, one might drop a little bit more, a little bit more hip action than the other side. But it takes a look at a lot of horses to get to seeing where the lameness is. I think it's thousands and thousands of horses to really be good at doing a proper lameness exam. So reserve mostly for your veterinarian. I'm sure your farrier can help in this situation as well. A lot of times we'll get referrals just because the farriers come out and flex the horse and can feel something different when they're shoeing the horse, whether that's a forelimb or a hind limb. So that's a part of it too.
Dr. Whitaker, Morgan in California says her mare is short-strided both in hand and under saddle. Could this be caused by joint pain, muscle or tendon issues, or a combination of these?
Yeah, it could be. You know, it's kind of hard to say in a specific case. I mean, some horses are just move short-strided, so I don't know if her mare, just because of the, you know, her conformation, some of the horses that are more straight in the shoulder will move more short-strided in the front end, or if they're more straight behind through their hock and stifle, sometimes they'll move more short-strided. So in this case, it's hard to say. I mean, some of the conditions we'll see in the front end, well, they'll move short-strided. Like sometimes if they have coffin joint or bilateral foot issues, they may look a little short. That's a common one we'll see where both look short in the back end. Sometimes if they have hock or stifle issues on both limbs, they'll look short and stiff behind. But like I said, it's probably will require an assessment by a veterinarian, which would likely include flexion to those joints to see if the horse seems to have any pain coming from those areas that might be contributing to that short stridedness in this case. Sometimes we'll do butte trials on horses too, you know, where you'll give them some an inset or an anti-inflammatory and see if it changes the way they move. And if it does, then it's more likely that pain's a factor versus that's just how the horse is.
Dr. Conway, Brittany in New York says her high-performance horse was recently diagnosed with the early stages of osteoarthritis. What can she do to treat him and keep him performing in the long term?
I think keeping and treating him, I think that's going to be left to your veterinarian first and foremost, especially if you're getting it diagnosed in the early stages, which is difficult. A lot of times that is related to a lameness exam, flexion test, and seeing something, because we don't always see it on x-rays at the early stages of OA. It's really a diagnosis of flexion, or we might palpate something that seems different, or they might tell us something that the horse is doing differently, and we'll do you know, butte tests, or like Bo just mentioned, or even instilling intra-articular medications to make sure that we're in the right spot, or blocks, nerve blocks, joint blocks, those kind of things. So being able to get into the vet is probably first and foremost, even in the early stages of the disease. And a good relationship, again, I mentioned this earlier, with your farrier is also a part of that process. So as far as treating himself, I think it's just more of a getting into the veterinarian. There are products out there that I think can help in the early stages to help provide the proper nutrition for your synoviocytes, your chondrocytes, and those kind of things that actually work. And those products I'm thinking of are the pentasan polysulfate, as well as there's a couple companies that make those. And those are systemic products that might be helpful. And I would say that owners and clients can probably give those. They're typically intramuscular injections. The other one out there, which is, most folks know, is the polysulfated glycosaminoglycans. And those are also an intramuscular injection. So both of those will be targets on my list to kind of have as the routine part of monthly or weekly management, especially in the early stages. But apart from that, I think it's the veterinarian's job to get in there and decide what needs to be done. And that could be anything. It could be as simple as just exercise or changing up your exercise, but also some of those things I mentioned systemically are helpful.
Dr. Whitaker, Bella in Texas wants to know what the recommended treatment for bone cysts in horses is.
Yeah, it's going to depend on the cyst and where it's at, the size of it. In general, with a substantial size cyst, the best luck we've had is surgical intervention. So typically what we do at most of those, again, depending on the location, the size, is we'll put a screw into the cyst or over the cyst. We've had really good results with that. There's different techniques. Some people drill them. There's bioabsorbable screws. There's screws that don't absorb. There's different ways to handle that. Some cysts are open to the joint, or they'll have at least a communication with the joint. So in sometimes in those cases, the best thing to do is go there in there with an arthroscope and clean that cyst out from the bottom and clean out. And sometimes you'll fill those in with different products after you get done with it. But in the most case, if it's a cyst that we're sure is causing clinical lameness, surgeries usually are our go-to. Occasionally, you can get by in some cases by just treating the joint. We usually get pretty temporary results from that. But again, it's going to depend on a specific case, the size of the cyst, where it's at. Sometimes cysts don't even cause pain too. So usually we try to, obviously, if we have a lameness, localize it to make sure that's where the problem is as well.
Dr. Conway, we have a question from Cheryl in our live audience. She says that her 23-year-old dressage mare sustained a moderate hind suspensory injury, and they've been hand walking for almost 3 months. She will have an ultrasound in 2 weeks to determine if the lesion has healed enough for her to be ridden. She's concerned, though, about the loss of top line, given that the horse has some spinous process arthritis. Do you have any advice to mitigate this issue?
And if it's an older dressage horse and top line, I really do like the flexion exercises that you can do using treats with the neck and with the underline, and those are probably best demonstrated in person with a veterinarian or somebody who's very familiar with how to do those flexion type tests or exercises. We usually use treats. You put one off to the side, making them bend their neck to the right, one to the left, one underneath, and making them reach down and working on those type of flexions, as well as sometimes even doing something as simple as shock waving the dorsal spine can be helpful to relieve some of that pain, and then getting the horse on some type of anti-inflammatory type pain relief, thinking of furocoxib or bute or banamine or something along those lines. Just that little bit can help them feel better and start to improve. And then proper nutrition, But if it's a severe disease, proximal suspensory, and we have limited movement or ability to get out of the stall, I think that's tough. But if you can get out walking, or if you can get out moving a little bit, that all is going to help. So those would be some ideas that I have, and that have been successful tools, at least in my toolbox, to a certain degree. So.
Dr. Conway,
I can add to that real quick. There's a good resource called Activate Your Horse's Core by Hillary Clayton that shows you how to do those stretches. And it's a good resource if people want to find something they can have in front of them to look at.
Awesome. Thank you. We might be able to drop that in the chat for people that are listening live. Dr. Conway, our next question is from Elaine in Connecticut, who says her horse has arthritis in both knees and has extreme difficulty lying down, so he exhibits signs of sleep deprivation. Can she do anything to make him more comfortable?
I think the first part of this question is to make sure that we're talking about the knee and the horse is the carpus versus the knee, what we'd consider in a human, which is our akin to our stifle. So because both of those could be related to, but not being able to get up and lying down a lot. So if it is related to the carpus or even in the stifle, I think it's getting a proper neuro exam, looking at the front feet with your vet / or your farrier, but doing some diagnostics to see what is going on. And she mentioned arthritis. But would see the severity of the arthritis, what part of the knee, what part of the joint is it in? There's various joints within the carpus. We want to know that. Is there something that's we can manage potentially surgical, or is it even related to those things at all? It could be, a neuro issue. There's other things that might be going on, but joint injections might be a great option in this case, intra-articular therapy of some sort. And maybe it's just a test of corticosteroids and HA. There are potent anti-inflammatory. And in this case, it might be the one to go with just as a trial to see if there's something that you can instill in that joint, make that horse more comfortable getting up and down. I've had situations like this, and just actually getting some pain relief there intra-articularly has helped the most, especially if the source has been on butorbanamine or furococcib or something, and that's not helping at all. So I might start there. There might be more to this question or this problem. So just more diagnostics might be warranted.
Dr. Whitaker, Ethelyn in North Carolina wants to know how you choose the right products for injecting a horse's joints. What are the pros and cons of the options?
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, corticosteroids and hyaluronic acid have been kind of our oldest treatment, I guess. It's been around the longest. The drawbacks to that is that corticosteroids can cause laminitis and issues in horses that have insulin dysregulation, metabolic disorders. And so you have to be careful in those cases, because certainly you don't want to do something that's going to cause harm. Also, corticosteroid injections given repeatedly at high enough doses can cause damage to the cartilage over time as well. And so we want to use those judiciously. I don't think, there's certain ones that are worse than others as far as cartilage damage. So we certainly have to choose the correct ones for the correct situations and not overuse them. Other than that, we have our orthobiologic products that we both mentioned already, which is your PRPs, your APSs, your autologous protein solution. You have your IRAP products as well as the amnion products. And so, those are, choosing which one of those is more complicated than something we want to get into here, but we can just say those as a category. Generally, they're safe. Generally, we think of them as probably slowing progression to some degree in that joint. They all have some kind of secondary anti-inflammatory property as well. And then we have our, beyond that, we have our polyacrylamide gels. There's there's two types. There's the 2.5% and the 4% products that are also available. I generally use the 2.5%. I have to occasionally use the 4% as well. I like those because they tend to be very long acting. Like you'll get, on average, I'll probably get twice as long length of efficacy out of one of those products as I will say corticosteroids. And so those are the factors that we look at. Then you have to, on top of that, think about cost. You know, how quickly does the horse need to show improvement? So if you've got a show in 5 days, obviously, you know, we don't want to use a product that's going to take, you know, 2 to 4 weeks to take effect. So there's lots of things that go into how we decide what to use. But generally, those are the big categories of products that we have, and just a real quick overview of some of the things that go into our decision-making process.
Dr. Conway, Jennifer in England says her horse will randomly stumble over his front limbs. His vet hasn't found any obvious signs of lameness, though. What could be causing this stumbling?
So stumbling can be a number of causes, and one could be laziness of the horse and just, you know, poor athletic conditioning, or that the horse's shoeing is maybe a little bit off for him in the whatever ground you're trotting him on or running him on or walking him on. And other root causes could be related to systemic diseases that we're not aware of, that could be affecting a neurological system of some sort. And so those would be rule outs as well. And then finally, we have the diseases that, and orthopedic type diseases that affect the neck or the axillary skeleton or of some sort that might be contributing to the stumbling. But all of those are going to be kind of rule outs, and your vet's going to be able to go through those. I mean, if the horse has a fever or has a temperature, you might have your answer pretty quickly. Some type of infection, systemic disease process going on. If you've done blood work or blood tests or sent off tests for EPM, which I don't think occurs in England, but maybe there's some type of other disease that we haven't looked at here that I'm not unfamiliar with. But I think neurological diseases, neck issues, cervical facet issues can be a major problem and cause some stumbling. And those are getting diagnosed more and more. So a good set of x-rays goes a long ways here. If it's a performance horse and it's all of a sudden kind of started to do that. So we may have some insufficiency or ECVSM or some of these other terms that we have for facet disease in the cervical region of the spine. So those are some of my ideas, at least on this question.
Dr. Whitaker, Rosemary in Montana asks how veterinarians treat ligament desmitis in performance horses.
Yeah, I mean, this will obviously correlate with the suspensory question earlier that I discussed, because desmitis just means inflammation of a ligament. The most common ligament that we deal with is the suspensory ligament, the most common we associate with desmitis, just because it's the one we treat the most. And so I guess we've kind of already talked about some of those ways we would treat that. One thing we didn't talk about, I think as much earlier, was shoeing. Oftentimes when these horses have ligament injuries, especially of the suspensory, we'll radiograph the feet, see what their angles are. There are some shoes out there that we just generally refer to as suspensory support shoes, but biomechanically help support the suspensory, especially when they're in soft footing. So that's one big part of it, is the shoeing aspect. And then, like we mentioned before, oftentimes we'll use things like orthobiologics. Most commonly, if we're injecting something into it, we'll use one of those products and then follow it up with often shockwave therapy. We use a lot of shockwave therapy on desmitis cases. I mean, pretty much, most of them will end up doing shockwave therapy on it, whether we do orthobiologic or not. Orthobiologics we often use if we have like a hole. And we'll certainly inject an orthobiologic into the hole. If they're really inflamed, oftentimes we'll inject one around the ligament if there's not a hole to inject it into. And then, like I said, follow that up with shockwave therapy. Typically, we'll do three sessions of shockwave 2 weeks apart. Then we also have a rehab center that will often send us horses to do aquatread work, as well as laser therapy and physiotherapy while those horses are rehabbing.
Dr. Conway, Jackie in California says her vet recommended fusing her horse's hock to make him more comfortable. Can you explain why this would reduce his pain and how vets do this? And is there a way to do this without surgery?
So hocks that are fusing are fairly common. Really, they are. We see a lot of performance or quarter horses, even English performance horses that can get down the road. You know, they've reached that 8 to 10, 12 year old years, and they've had a lot of miles put on their hocks. And the distal intertarsal joint, which is the joint in kind of the middle part of the hock, and then the tarsal metatarsal is the bottom joint in the hock, those take a beating. And so the body's response to a lot of inflammation in a region, at least in joints, oftentimes is to lay down new bone. They're trying to fix themselves. And as things with hocks, and the reason they sometimes get so painful is we've sort of eroded part of that bone, and we've gotten down into the part of the bone that has a lot of exposed, potentially exposed nerves and C fibers, which is the part of the nerve that is responsible for that sensory pain within the hock. And so the best way to fix it, the body's trying to fix itself by laying down new bone, continuously laying down new bone in the hock. And sometimes we recommend just surgically going in there and drilling out those hocks or lasering out those hocks and actually having them fuse themselves. Because once you have one solid bone, you don't have all of those exposed nerve fibers. It's basically one bone contained, and so it's not painful at all. It's just like a new one bone. That so that distal intertarsal joint, a tarsal metatarsal joint, will fuse together, or ankylose is sometimes the term we use. And those can be accomplished surgically. They can be accomplished sometimes through injections of, you know, in old days, or some of the things that we've done was ethyl alcohol. We've instilled in those to create a reaction in that joint. It comes with risk as well. So it's not always recommended, especially if you get it outside the joint, it's a problem. But that could be a solution in this case as well. So both of those are potential options.
Dr. Whitaker, Jan in our live audience says with middle-aged horses fed a healthy diet and on a good exercise program, are supplements indicated to aid in the prevention of injuries? And if so, what types might be helpful?
I don't know about as far as preventing injuries. As giving a supplement to prevent injury, I don't know that there's one I would necessarily recommend for that. I'm not a huge supplement person as far as just putting a healthy horse on a bunch of supplements. I like to use them in a very targeted manner and supplements that are research-based. And so generally in that case, I wouldn't have one that I would say, yeah, you should use this to hopefully prevent injury. You know, I think some of the ones that provide some, you know, omega-3 fatty acids and things like that are good systemically for horses just to help generally decrease systemic inflammation. But I don't have any particular one that I would recommend for that in particular. I don't know if Dr. Conway has anything, but there's certainly not one for this specific question that I would recommend.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything to your point. Some of the omegas do a good job of just overall providing the nutrients that the body needs to maintain healthy, you know, lubricant and things like that go into making joint fluid. But as far as, yeah, mitigating that, no, sir, I don't have any other recommendations.
Okay.
Dr. Whitaker, on the topic of supplements, can you tell us how an owner might choose a high quality supplement if they decide it's necessary for their show horse?
Yeah, I think looking at ones that are research based are best. And so, which unfortunately there's not a lot of those out there. A lot of the marketing you see around these products is a lot of anecdotal evidence, basically, where, you know, they'll have a trainer or somebody said they used it and it was great. They don't really have a whole lot of research on the product. You know, sometimes it'll be extrapolated from research in humans, which is okay. But, you know, ideally, if we can have some equine-based research on products, that's what I'll look for. And there's several companies that do that. I don't know, we won't mention companies here, but I would generally look for ones that have researched their products and have some evidence behind them. Again, I'm not a huge supplement advocate, but I think they're very effective for targeted conditions when you know what you're using them for, as opposed to just generic, you know, like a lot of them you'll see they'll advertise basically. If they say it treats everything, then I would shy away from those. I like them to use them specifically for certain conditions and based on research.
Dr. Conway, Emmeline in Maryland wants to know if veterinarians usually recommend injecting the SI or lumbosacral joint if they suspect a horse could be suffering from pain or arthritis in these joints.
No, we inject SIs, I think, when, as far as at least in my practice and what I've done, when I palpate the region, I do some other tests that are probably more, the testing is more related to where I learned to practice from CSU. We have some different techniques where we feel like if we're engaging a certain part of the SI on one of the hind limbs, I might diagnose and treat that joint. But it's not the same joint as what you would find with a stifle or a hawk or an arthritidial joint. It's more of a fibrous type joint. And so, yes, it gets painful. Yes, it can have need to be injected. And there's various approaches, both ultrasound guided approaches that we might do, or even blind that some folks will do. But I do inject them. But a lot of times to me, those are referred pain. Something might be happening somewhere else. It could be in a hip. It could be in a stifle. It could be in a hock or something else going on in the hind limbs. And I've also had some other diseases within the mid back or in the neck that creep up, and you get those other things fixed, and there's not a reason to inject the SI. But sometimes it is an SI issue or lumbosacral type pain issue, and that's a need. So we'll inject the back. I think shockwave is a good thing for backs. I think SIs can benefit from injections at some points, but I don't do them as often as probably some of the other veterinarians, but I do them. But it's probably, you know, 10% or less of my injections.
Dr. Whitaker, Sue in California says her horse shows intermittent stiffness, but it doesn't seem to have a consistent pattern or cause. Why might this happen?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a lot of reasons. I would think if the horse at times seems like it moves pretty well and at other times seems stiff, you've most likely probably dealing with some osteoarthritis somewhere in that horse, I would venture to guess, unless there's just variations in horses and turnout and things like that. You know, if the horse is up and then for periods of time and then seems stiff, or, you know, if you've got some management things there that could affect it. But overall, I would probably get the horse evaluated. And I would venture to guess the horse probably has some osteoarthritis somewhere that's contributing to that stiffness. It could also be in the back as well. And so maybe have the horse's back evaluated as well, because sometimes they'll get stiff or have some compensatory issues, and certainly have your tack checked as well to make sure that's not contributing in case the horse is getting stiff to its back.
Dr. Conway, Pauline in New York asks how shoeing and hoof care can affect a horse's joint health.
Oh, it can affect it tremendously. Proper shoeing and can be a just make a dramatic difference. You get an underslung heel or a toe that gets really long. You put a lot of pressure and changes on the back part of that foot, can be problematic, contribute to OA, early onsets of OA. I've seen a number of yearlings or weanlings that come in. Eventually they haven't had any of their feet picked up for a year or 2 years, and they're 2 year olds now, and they got pedal osteitis going on. They've got just terrible cracks and things in their hoof wall, and their hoof capsule is just poor. So getting an early start is a big part of that process. So that relationship with your farrier is one of the most important things that you can have, I think, along with your veterinarian. But maintaining proper hoof balance, AP balance, getting x-rays, getting lateral x-rays, maybe making sure the farrier's covering the foot, making sure you're getting proper breakover, making sure your angles are good, both lateral, medial, and AP, anterior, posterior balance. All of those things, I think, go into keeping the feet comfortable and not, you know, for a performance horse, it's almost everything, because they've got to be able to turn fast. A lot of times they're in a barrel arena, which is most of my clients. So if they're in a race horse, they've got to make big, long, sweeping turns. That's a part of it too. If they're a cutting or a reining horse, they've got to make quick turns. If they're a jumping horse, they're landing on their feet, constantly putting pressure. So all of those things are an important part of the equation, at least.
Dr. Whitaker, Ryan in Nevada wants to know if shockwave can be beneficial for performance horses with soft tissue or joint problems. And if so, what protocol would you recommend?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Like we use shockwave on a daily basis, often multiple times a day for soft tissue and joint issues. Just saying soft tissue issues is pretty broad, but, you know, we use it acutely, like when we have acute soft tissue tears, but we'll use it, you know, typically the protocol on those is we'll do 3 treatments, typically about 2 weeks apart. You know, usually we'll do anywhere from, depending on the area, you know, anywhere from 800 to 1,000 shocks typically, and on different energy settings, kind of depending on the injury. We use it for joints quite a bit too. I use it a lot for, like you were talking earlier about the hawks that are fusing, and pasterns as well, who kind of have a similar condition. I found it very effective in those cases to keep those horses going. If you're not going to surgically fuse them and you're trying to get those diffusal on their own, I think it could be very effective. And very effective just for OA. There's been some really good research done on shock waving joints and showing some improvement in cartilage metabolism, things like that. So I think it's very effective. On average, we do 3 treatments 2 weeks apart. Sometimes, like if on these hawks that are fusing, or have more serious OA or even pasterns, oftentimes on those, we'll do them once every 3 or 4 months throughout the year. It's pretty common on those, and not necessarily do a full series, but just do them on a couple monthly basis, and that tends to do well for those horses.
Dr. Conway, Catherine in Pennsylvania has a former high performance horse and would like to know the best ways to keep him comfortable in light to moderate work in his step down career.
That's a tough question. To keep him light to moderately comfortable in the step down process of a career, I think it's a lot of things go into that. Working with your trainer, making sure the horse is obviously at least sound enough for that current performance rating or wherever that may be, and making sure that you've eliminated other disease processes ongoing. You know, we mentioned these earlier. There's other things, insulin dysregulation, PPID, Cushing's, these other things. Making sure the horse is healthy, all of those things. If all of those are good, I think just proper conditioning, proper exercise routines, and your trainers, you know, out there, and your veterinarians can help making sure that that's you're not overdoing it within those programs. And I think overdoing it looks like a horse is getting sore more often. You have to keep him on non-steroidals consistently, maybe working towards a program that you can have him limited on a non-steroidal, or no non-steroidals at all. Maybe you're just able to have good nutrition and those type of things. Maybe it's injecting him in the intra-articularly of some sort, you know, once a year, every 6 months, every, you know, four to six months, those kind of things. So the step down process is tough, but it happens. We have it happen in our program, as my mentioned, my wife's a trainer as well. And so it's a delicate process, but I think working with a good trainer, a good veterinarian, and just doing regular performance evaluations are part of that.
Dr. Whitaker, our last question of the night is for you. It's from Haley in Alberta, who asks how vets can determine the difference between pain and a true behavior problem in performance horses.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. That's something I think we all struggle with sometimes, is because sometimes the behavior, we can't elicit it when we're looking at the horse in many cases. So oftentimes it's when the horse is being ridden, sometimes in a specific position. So you know, it can be helpful in those cases to actually have the client ride the horse so you can see the behavior. Oftentimes at the hospital, sometimes that's not possible. So we have to use palpation, observation, you know, flexions, all those things to try to see if we can find the areas where we might be able to see that horse has some pain. I mean, sometimes those issues can be gastric ulcers as well. We oftentimes see behavior issues caused by gastric ulcers. Some oftentimes neck and pain issues can show that as well. And so it just comes down to kind of our investigative process of looking at what is the behavior, what are the common reasons for that, and then kind of just going through our steps of investigating all those things that we think possibly could be related. And sometimes it's trial and error, like if it's a behavior, you can't get that horse to list that behavior when you're looking at it, then you treat what you can find and see if that improves. We often do, like we've both mentioned, we often do bute trials in those cases where we'll have the client go home, give the horse, say, just as an example, maybe 2 grams of bute for 2 days, 2 or 3 days, and then ride the horse on the second day and ride the horse more than once and see, you know, if that behavior goes away. And if that horse is, you know, works beautifully when it's on bute or Phenamine, then that gives us a good indication that it is a pain issue. Sometimes, obviously, we deal with things that are just behaviors not caused by pain. And so some of those can be difficult. And sometimes we have to go through several things that we eliminate, you know, and then sometimes we do come to the conclusion that, yeah, I don't think this is being caused by pain. I think this is just, you know, a behavior that the horse is exhibiting for another reason. And so those can sometimes be difficult conversations and trying to figure out what you can do for those horses.
Well, that's all the time we have for tonight. We've covered a lot, and I hope our listeners have learned as much as I have. Thank you, Dr. Whitaker and Dr. Conway, for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Haley.
And thank you to Arthromed for sponsoring this event. Finally, thank you to our audience for listening and sending in all of these questions. If you're listening to us after the live event as a podcast episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and recommend Ask the Horse Live to a friend. Until next time, from everyone at the horse, have a great night.